this Wednesday, this hump day. Chuck and Buck in the mornings, Bucky Jacobson, Chuck Powell, Matt Slickhawk, Mikolas, and 9 and 8 with you. Coming up a little bit later on this hour, in case you missed it, Mike Holmgren, his conversation with us yesterday about the Seahawks' big win Monday night over the Minnesota Vikings, 21-7. But we start every 7 o'clock hour with our Seahawks insider. It's Greg Bell. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're good. I'll let you in on the conversation we started the morning with. How strange it is to be a 5 seed and pretty much be in put-your-feet-up-on-the-desk mode. Going forward, there's very little that can knock them off of this spot, and I have a feeling over the course of the next 3 weeks we're going to be talking a lot about rest versus rust. Who do you sit? I mean, who would you rather play, the Bears or the Cowboys? And really, few teams in the National Football League, even the top teams, are in the position that the Seahawks are finding themselves in right now. It's rather odd.
Well, that's the pragmatics of it, but I can tell you that Carroll is not going to run it that way. He's going to keep the pedal down. He's never coasted into the playoffs, even when they have clinched as division winners and had seeds and had the top seeds when they went to the Super Bowl. And Russell Wilson has started every game of his career, and they're going to play everybody, and they're going to keep – they want to sustain the level of play and the momentum that they have. And this is part of their finishing mantra that they have, and everything's about finishing the season and finishing games. And it would run counter to that to take any pressure off of the opponent of any game. It doesn't matter what the stakes are. And so, I mean, yeah, there may be some – there may be a time that Brett Hundley plays a fourth quarter against Arizona if they have the playoffs and seed already locked in by December 30th. But I don't expect Russell Wilson to not play any games, and I don't expect the defense and Bobby Wagner to not – I think it's going to look exactly the same. And they want to sustain the level of play that they have because they have to go right in on January 5th or 6th and play the very first round. They don't have the benefit of a week and a off and a bye, and they'll be on the road for the entire playoffs, however long they stay in it. And you need to sustain how you're playing now and try to peak at the end of the season. They've definitely peaked here with four straight wins, so I don't think on the field it's going to look different.
Yeah, I you know what, I agree with you, and I think it is the right approach, but it is rather strange in a year in which, you know, we're trying to figure out, is this really going to end up being a playoff squad? And to sit there at 8-5 and really have your playoff fate sort of determined with a lot of football left in the season, at the very minimum, it's a strange ordeal that here we are, Greg, with three games left in the season, and we kind of know where the Seahawks are slotted.
It is, and I tried to ask Carroll about that after the game Monday night, and he said, we haven't accomplished anything yet because they haven't officially clinched, so not surprised that he would say that. To start 0-2, but in the bigger picture, to have overhauled basically your entire coaching staff, both coordinators, the foundation of your defense, show them the door, and change your offensive philosophy completely to go to run and throw and run 42 times a game and throw it 15, 18, 20 times. To do all of that within one off season into the preseason and then get back to the playoffs you missed last year, it is absolutely remarkable. And they've had some fortune go their way, especially with other teams in the NFC who just fallen off the map. Carolina, Green Bay, Minnesota now losing back to 500. The pack came back to them at the same time they surged, and they and Dallas are the two hottest teams in the NFC right now, and looks like that's going to be the first round matchup of this January 5th or 6th.
Gee, we've talked about it. I mean, I'm sure you guys talked about in years past before I was here that they were passing the ball too much, and now they're running the ball a ton. There's always this: you got to keep it balanced, you got to keep the defense on their heels. Well, I can see that from the passing standpoint of things, but the Seahawks are not keeping anybody on their heels. Everybody knows they're running the ball. How in the heck are they continuing to just pound it at them even though they know it's coming?
Well, because you're just doing it, Bucky, and they don't care if it's three and out. I mean, again, the game started on Monday with three runs by Chris Carson and a punt. And I remember talking to you guys and writing and saying to people, they've gotten to the point after that Chicago game in week 2, they have to run just to run it. so that they can get pressure off of Russell Wilson and have a chance to pass protect. And that's exactly what's happened. They run it just to run it. And it, whether it's three plays and a punt, whether they get 20 yards, and it doesn't matter how many yards they get, they run it just to run it early in games so they can throw later and have time to throw later. And that's really what it is. It's about sticking with it. And I mentioned the other day, Carroll said it's about being dedicated to running and continuing to run, whether you're getting yards or not, that the difference, that is the difference with this offense this season. And implied in that is that I have a coordinator and play caller who will do that, who will bang his head against the brick wall and keep running into that brick wall and keep running into that brick wall, even if it's 2 yards a carry. And I didn't have that before in Darrell Bevell. The implication was Bevell wanted to just have Russell Wilson with the ball in his hands, dropping back the throw, and if the throw's not open, then you take off running, and it's playground Russell Wilson football, gaining 95% of the team's yards, like what's happened last year. And this difference in Schottenheimer is that Carroll obviously came to him after week two and said, I don't care if we're going backwards running it, we have to run the ball so we can have a chance to throw later in games. So I want you to call 9 runs in the first 11 plays of every game. And that's happened 2 weeks in a row now, and that's been the norm for the last 2 months. The results are they've won 8 of 11 and are in the playoffs. So you can't argue with the results of what Carroll's approach has wrought this season.
Along those lines, I mean, I think back to those first two games that you've talked about, you've referenced quite frequently with us, where it didn't seem that Pete and Schottenheimer were on the same page. And there was an even an uh-oh moment in those first two games where they seemed to be disagreeing on how to proceed as head coach and offensive coordinator, the identity of this football team. And then to kind of parallel that against what happened with the Vikings and their head coach and offensive coordinator on Monday night, which eventually led to head coach John DeFilippo, or excuse me, offensive coordinator John DeFilippo being fired yesterday. I mean, I guess it just screams. I mean, you better be on the same page, and you got to wonder how a head coach and an offensive coordinator don't see things the same way when they're rather, you know, fresh together. I mean, this is the first year together. They should know exactly what it is that they want to try to accomplish as a group.
Right, but Pete Carroll has shown an ability in a valuing of continuity that Mike Zimmer has not. This is now will be the fourth offensive coordinator in 4 years at Minnesota, and I know one was because Shermer went to go get a job, but a head coaching job. But Carroll really, really values continuity. He kept Darrell Bevell for 7 years. He kept Tom Cable for 7 years. The only reason he's changed his defensive coordinators that they've gone and, with the exception of Chris Richard, have gone to get head coaching jobs, Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn before him. And then they just strayed a little too far defensively from Carroll's core principles. So he brought back the guy that he almost gave the defensive coordinator to job when he gave it to Chris Richard, and that's Ken Norton Jr. He values continuity in his staff. He develops them into head coaches. That's really important to him. And they were trying to figure each other out the first 2 weeks, Schottenheimer and Carroll. Carroll admitted about a month and a half ago that he miscalculated the offensive line, thinking they were better pass protecting, had gotten better with the Solari in new system and DJ Fluker coming in. He thought they had improved over the offseason more than they had. And he was surprised to see in Denver and Chicago that they were just as bad at pass protecting when they had to throw it on every down, when they decided to throw it on every down 73% of the time, just as bad as they were last season. And it was a revelation for Carroll before the week three game that, man, we can't do this. We cannot continue down this path. We don't pass protect like I thought we could. We got to run just because we can't pass protect consistently. And then that's what changed. And so he just basically gave an edict to Schottenheimer and said, forget everything we did the first 2 weeks. Forget our plan to throw the ball as much as we did or even close to last year. We absolutely have to run because our offensive line cannot withstand pass blocking on every down. And Schottenheimer saluted, okay, did it, and dutifully had called it most runs in the NFL since.
Now, along the DeFilippo lines, when Bobby Wagner says we knew when they were going to run and we knew when they were going to throw, is that a reflection of the dysfunction maybe that the Vikings offense was operating under, or is that a defense just being locked in on the game plan and on the game film study?
Well, it's a little bit of both, and it sure helps that it was there were a lot of third and eights and third and 12s for Minnesota. And you're definitely going to know when they're going to pass and when they're going to run. But Minnesota came into the game having, over the last couple months, thrown it more than anybody in the league and run it less. So the Seahawks just game plan for what the tendencies were coming into the game for Minnesota. And that's why DeFilippo is not their coach anymore, because he did not adjust at all. He didn't change what the tendencies were coming in. He didn't adjust to the Seahawks adding 6 and 7 defensive backs on the field. Nothing really changed, and they just kept trying to throw into 8 coverages and 8 man coverage and 3 up front. I mean, it's easy to say in retrospect, but power run the ball at 3 down linemen and 8 running backs, even if it's 3rd and 8, and they never did that. And I think it ended up with 13 carries for the whole game, and it was a 3-0 game into the fourth quarter. So that'll tell you how it stayed pass and run to them. So Wagner's saying that because they did exactly what film and tendencies said they would do.
All right, last thing for you, not to stir any kind of controversy pot here, but Frank Clark, you think Pete Carroll is all right with the swagger, the calling out Sherm and claiming that it's his defense and all of that? Does that work for the Seahawks?
I think Pete Carroll's okay with it. He might have said something to Clark. I think that Bobby Wagner and Doug Baldwin and guys like that in the locker room are not so okay with it.
Okay.
And I would think that they've probably pulled Frank Clark aside and say, can we just let that go now? We're playing well. We've got a unity and a chemistry here. He's in San Francisco. You don't need to remind everybody that he's there. Can we just stop that? Especially because we got 4 more days now, and reporters are going to be in starting today in our locker room asking him probably about Sherman. So I think internally the leadership of that team might have handled that, especially Doug Baldwin, who cherishes Richard Sherman as a brother, and Bobby Wagner does too to a certain extent. But to be fair, I was standing right there. I wrote it because he said it, and I was standing there. But your co-host in the afternoon made sure he had a poker stick poking Frank Clark about that Richard Sherman subject to get the answer that he got.
I don't know who you're talking about. Doesn't sound like my guy at all.
Yeah, Mr. Softy Mahler made sure that question was pointed enough to elicit a response from an already charged up Frank Clark.
Well, at least when he got the answer, he didn't broadcast it. At least
no, that's true. He just kept it to himself.
Kept it to himself. And
well, I'm just as guilty of that as he is because I wrote it, but I just write what the guys say. But in the context, I wanted fans to know that it wasn't like Frank Clark just walked in the locker room and said, "Hey guys, Richard Sherman doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not here anymore."
Just quickly, though, I mean, but all right with Frank Clark calling it his defense when, you know, obviously that's Bobby Wagner's defense?
No, I mean, he may have misspoken and gotten a little carried away there. He meant that it was my defense in the sense that I'm still here and you're not. I'm part of this team and you're not. I wouldn't read a ton into that, although if Wagner was already talking to Clark about what he said, he'd probably say, oh, and by the way, this is my defense. I'm sure he did do it.
Yeah. Well, there's a very good chance that Bobby Wagner, yes, it's your defense, but your defensive end's making more money than you going forward.
Well, and Wagner talked about that after Monday's game, about what player of the year, defensive player of the year consideration. He says people love sacks, and people are attracted to sacks, and he's got a point there.
Yeah. All right, Greg, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Thanks,
all right,
Chuck.
Greg Bell joining us here for a little Seahawks at 7. It's brought to you by the Michaels Automotive Group, a family-owned and operated dealership that places customer satisfaction as its highest priority. They feature 3 of America's most popular automotive brands, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Subaru, all located at the same location just off I-90 in Eastgate. Coming up next, in case you missed it, Mike Holmgren's thoughts on the big win Monday night, Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Ladies and gentlemen,
coming to you live on Seattle's original diehard sports station, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR. Now back to Chuck and Buck.
I'll be home for Christmas. Just you wait and see.
Tony Bennett action.
There'll be snow and mistletoe.
Yeah.
And presents need. The tree.
Great, 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 great night.
It's Chuck and Buck on the Morning Sports Radio 950 KJR. Every show following a Seahawks game, we have Hugh Millen in studio, and then Mike Holmgren. The great Mike Holmgren stops by in the 9 o'clock hour to break everything down for us. And in case you missed it, we replay a portion of it for you the following day. So with a Monday Night Football game, that comes your way today here on a Wednesday. You know, there was a lot of talk coming out of that game, like how overwhelmed Kirk Cousins looked early on, how overwhelmed the Minnesota Vikings offense looked throughout the course of the game, and John DeFilippo ended up getting fired over it, for goodness sake. The explanation afterward that that I heard, and many people could see it during the course of the game, was that the Seahawks gave the Vikings a look they hadn't seen before on film. They came out with like 12 cornerbacks and said, try to complete a pass, and then still managed to get a pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a look that the Vikings weren't expecting. They didn't adjust to it well. And as Greg Bell just told us in our last segment, probably is what caused John DeFilippo to get fired, that he never did adjust to it during the course of the game. So with Mike Holmgren sitting in here, offensive genius that he is, I asked him how surprised are you to see a look that you haven't seen on film in week 14 of the season? And then secondarily, how long does it usually take a good offensive coordinator to adjust to that?
It doesn't happen all that often in week 14. I mean, you know, you've seen pretty much what they're doing. If it's totally different, and I would agree, there are a couple of big long-range shots on television where they double Thielen, they double Diggs, and really different coverages. You know, it was good stuff. It takes about a quarter. It can screw you up a little bit for about a quarter. If they come out, you know, and they don't run many plays, you're 3 and out or you're 6 and out, and you go, boy, that's different. Upstairs are saying they're running this. Every time, Jim Zorn, who was my quarterback coach, his job, one of his jobs during the game was every time he'd give me coverage. Just don't give me verbiage. Just give me what coverage they were in.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know that. And if all of a sudden I know what I'm expecting, and all of a sudden I'm hearing cover, boom, and I'm going, well, that's different. So now you get your guys together on the sidelines and go, this is how they're playing us. Don't be surprised by anything. So we go to plan B, or we go, you know, if you don't have an answer, it might not work, but you better have an answer for it. You better have a pocket of things that you think, okay, this will work against that, or I can use this. And I don't, last night, goodness me, the Seahawks, give the defense credit. They were awesome last night. Mm-hmm. They were really good. And Minnesota was pretty good, too, on defense. But Minnesota's offense, to me, it just didn't look very good. I mean, not talking about he got flustered. I think the quarterback had problems. They could not deal with the pass rush. They couldn't run with any consistency, really.
Even though they have more defensive backs out on the field, and they're still putting that much heat on you,
yeah,
and pressure. Yeah, he looked overwhelmed. Cousins looked overwhelmed to me, and he's been around too long.
Well, the thing is, you know, Frank Clark took over the game. In my opinion, he was really brilliant last night.
Yeah.
Now you got to know that going in. That you got to take care of that guy. So if all of a sudden he blasts through the tackle a couple times, you better get somebody else over there, line up and chip them, do something. You know, that's, you're talking about adjustments.
Right.
That's the first thing you do. Give the quarterback a chance to throw it, you know. So, but give the Seahawks credit. Last night, they came out in Minnesota in a hostile environment. I mm-hmm. guess it was pretty loud.
Yep.
Minnesota didn't respond very well.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to hit just one more time on the Viking situation, in part because they're still alive and well in the wild card race, right? I mean, so we may, you know, in theory we could see them again, but this is not a 5-win team or, you know, 4-win team that just fired their OC. They're in the playoff hunt and they got 3 games left. Just one last comment as to how you foresee that, how you do that. I mean, that just seems like really drastic to do that at this time of the season, given where they're at.
That's a really good point. Because they will be in the playoffs, I think. The wild card teams will be the Vikings and Seattle, it appears to be. But the timing, you anticipate it. You can kind of hear a blow up, just a giant blow up after the game or something, and a rather impulsive, if you will, decision, not thinking about what you just said. You know, because the guy's a good coach. They just have maybe a little different thinking, a little different philosophy. Now the coordinator ultimately has to do what the head coach says. Now, if you're getting pushback like that, I didn't fire a lot of people. I had to fire my special teams coach 1 year because he just wouldn't listen. He wouldn't listen. He wouldn't do it. Good guy. I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
I go, this is not working. You got to do what I ask you to do. You know, and so I don't know what happened, but that's a good point. This puts a lot of extra pressure on a Vikings team that had, Super Bowl aspirations.
Yeah. I got to get an offensive-minded head coach's thoughts on what you do when your veteran quarterback pulls that stunt at the end of halftime. What was your reaction to Russell's interception?
I probably said in my home, I was watching it at home, I probably said what I would say if I was coaching on the field. I kind of jumped up and went, no, what are you doing? I started yelling at the television. It wasn't television's fault. But, you know.
Are you sure?
I couldn't believe it. You know,
Tessitore's pretty bad.
For a veteran quarterback in that situation, 16 seconds to go, no timeouts. It's not even. You remind him of the situation. You can't take a sack. You know, if you don't like it, throw it away. We have two more shots at it or three more shots at it. Excuse me. And you go through that little thing, but you shouldn't have to. I mean, it's really ingrained. But then when he didn't have it, they covered it pretty well. It was a sprint option, sprint right to the quarterback. When he peeled back, right away, you're going, uh-oh, that's not built into that play.
Yeah.
And it really surprised me because he is really a good decision maker. But there was a case of a veteran quarterback. I call him a veteran now. He's young by my standards. But I call him a veteran that there is a case of he has done miraculous things by moving around in the past. And that's also tucked in his brain, and so I'm going to do it again.
That playmaker mentality, I mean...
Yes.
I'm just going to guess here. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess. Try to read your mind. I guess there was a point in Montana's career and development where you never even worried about that, but it never fully left your mind with Young or Favre.
That's true, except even with Joe. I've referenced this play before. We were playing Atlanta. Deion Sanders was the corner. And actually, the play I called to get a first down, and we were going to win the game, I think we had very little time. I mean, we're in good shape. If I ran the ball and got stopped, we'd have to punt the ball, and they'd have a little time, but we were in good shape. If I passed the ball, get the first down, game's over. So I called that play that Russell had last night, except without the extra man, sprint right option, Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, best guys. You can't ask for better guys. And I said, if it's not there, throw it away. He sprints out. Sanders comes in, kind of fakes him out. And Joe throws the ball. Hits him right in the chest. Deion Sanders, we would have lost. He would have run it in. We would have lost the game.
But he dropped it.
He dropped it. I go, oh. Okay. But you know what? Those things, like with players, those things stuck in my mind forever and ever and ever and ever. And I said, not you, Chuck, because, you know, but Hugh and guys would criticize me for running draws and doing things, you know, that are pretty conservative.
Yeah.
Because of that play. That's why I do it.
I can't trust Montana.
If I can't trust the two best players at their positions in football with a play that we've run a million times, I can't trust anybody. I got to play it a certain way.
That's why it was so good to see Hasselbeck raise the flag last night, because you never worried about him.
But
oh boy,
you know, we use the term "what was he thinking?" You know, and it's just kind of almost like an expletive, right? And we don't really mean it literally. But I'm going to ask you, Mike, literally, trying to your very best guess, if you had to think, what thoughts were registering in Russell Wilson's mind on that play? What do you think he was thinking?
He was thinking, I think he thinks this. Every once in a while, he thinks this, and a lot of times it works. I can make something happen out of nothing. I will see somebody, our guys, we practice it so much that they adjust when I'm scrambling around. And he does. And he makes first downs, and he wins games because of it. But in that situation, on that play, under those circumstances, you'd have to say, in fact, I'm sure if I was still coaching and today, I'd say, look, I'd say what I just told you. You do great things, and I'm not gonna put the shackles on you. You're gonna play the game. I trust you. But in that situation, at that point of the game, on that point of the field, okay, there's only one thing I want you to do. You sprint out. If you got it, throw it. If you don't, throw it away.
Mm-hmm. What would have been your strategy there? First and goal at the 1, 16 seconds remaining, up 3-0, no timeouts. How do you handle that? The remaining 16 seconds of that half?
Well, you have two choices. If you decide to give the ball to Carson for a yard, which is not an unusual call because the guy is so tough and they have that's the kind of line they have, and you don't get it, you got to clock it. And then you've lost. You probably have 3 seconds left in the game. Now you got a decision to make: field goal or try it again, or you have at least three throws in 16 seconds. If you get the first two incomplete, say you figure 4 seconds, 5 seconds a throw, you got three throws. The odds are I would probably throw it. I would probably think that way going in. I've got four downs. I'm going to throw it. No timeouts. There's time for three plays, at least three plays. Plus the fourth.
Plus the fourth down, you can run.
Yeah.
Pass or kick a field goal.
That's right.
So you're getting four plays
and you're having
versus two.
And you have four plays, and then the last decision you make on the four plays is the same decision you'd have to make on the two plays, except you're losing two plays. Mm-hmm. You know, do I go kick a field goal? Do I run it again? You know, that kind of thing.
You're losing two plays if you run the ball.
Absolutely.
And you don't get it.
Absolutely.
So you're throwing the ball.
Yes.
He had to make sure he clarified that. Notice that?
Yeah.
You had to win his argument with Fain.
So you're throwing it.
So let me clarify.
I don't see much of an argument. You throw the ball.
Yes, you do. Now, I will say this. Like, on your last down, whether that's third down or fourth down, depending on the clock, I'm okay with running it, just as long as you don't kick a field goal.
I think you're kicking a field goal, too, but you could.
No, I don't kick a field goal.
I know you wouldn't. I would.
You wouldn't kick a field goal there?
No. You're on the 1 yard line. Get the damn ball in the end zone. Stop settling for field
goals. It's only 3-0. You could take the points.
Yeah, yes. You could go up two scores against a team that hadn't moved the ball on you. Game over.
You're getting the ball right back after the half. I would take the field goal. If it's fourth down there,
Chris Carson can't be stopped at the 1.
Yeah, it has been.
Bulldoze. Man. I don't know. You keep playing that way. Go ahead. I'll go ahead and play aggressively. Me and Bill Belichick. And
I got no problem playing aggressively. It just depends. It depends on the situation, when and where you should do it.
Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells and greats of the NFL. We'll sit back and we'll sip champagne and celebrate championships. But you and Tony Dungy, you can enjoy your championship. Conservative football.
I just watched Bill Parcells kick the field goal to go up 5 and thinking that, we got it in the bag. And then what happened? Kenyon Drake, he beat Gronk.
Bill Belichick, you mean, not Belichick. Parcells.
That's why I said Belichick.
No, you said Parcells.
I meant Belichick.
Yeah, man.
Same thing.
Yes, because Bill Belichick should be called out for that one regular season. I don't even think it was a mistake, but let's go ahead and bring that up. All right, anyway, thank you to Coach Holmgren. Again, we always have him to preview every game, to review every game. So good to have him on. Pete Carroll, I mean, there's a coach of the year sort of discussion that sort of ramped up this week. And I don't think there's any doubt that he's the guy right now. And I know that Nagy's had a good year with the Bears, and you can all, obviously, I think that there are a lot of head coaches like a McVay or a Peyton. We often overlook the team that had the best record that year just because they had talent, and I think that that's unfair. But considering everything that had to be pieced together by Pete Carroll, and I mean even some of the things that he was most questioned about going into this year, and for it to have worked out, I mean, I still sit here and question it. I still sit here like, Brian Schottenheimer? I mean, if you don't have hindsight to work with, I mean, there's no way I'm hiring Brian Schottenheimer at the time. Worked out. You know? In an era in which everybody is looking for that next offensive genius, and we're going to have to put 40 points on the board. And by the way, there's going to be another wave of head coaching hirings this offseason, new directions. And I'll bet you 80% of them are going to go toward offensive guys and how do we put more points on the board. And here's Pete Carroll just kind of coming through the back door like, oh, okay, well, we're going to run the ball 55% of the time and trust that we don't give up points, touchdowns, and continue to give up yards and field goals, and we're going to win the game. So it's like all of these decisions that he's made kind of flew in the face of progression, or at least perceived progression in the National Football League. And so it's almost, I mean, it's difficult. Now, maybe I'm too close to it, but it's difficult for me to think that anybody has had a better year of making decisions to help his team get better than what Pete Carroll has had. I mean, I think he's the coach of the year.
I would have a hard time finding anybody that would argue that there's more of a surprise. And I don't mean that like that they're surprising themselves, but I think everybody had to think that the Seahawks are taking a step backwards, and instead they're sitting here kind of thinking about possibly resting after this next week. I mean, clinching a spot in the playoffs and potentially even knowing where they're at, that's a bit unusual. I don't think, like I said, even if they had their true serum, they might have said, yeah, we're going to take a step back, but they wouldn't have, even they would have to admit, yeah, we didn't think we'd be where we are right now. And you're right. I think a lot of it is that old school mentality of we're going to control the ball, we're going to bend but don't break, even if we lost a bunch of guys on defense. We're still going to bend but don't break, give up field goals, we're going to pound the ball, and we're going to kind of impose our will on the other team.
I mean, even the John DeFilippo thing. I mean, that was something that a lot of us, I mean, I don't know if I ever used the name specifically, like we got to get John DeFilippo. But I do know that what he represented, new wave offense, progressive mind, I mean, that was the kind of guy that I wanted Pete Carroll to bring in. And I guess sometimes it's the decisions that you don't make.
Right.
Maybe are sometimes the best. And he goes with Brian Schottenheimer, who a lot of people have just felt, you know, games passed him by. I know he's a young man, but man, he's running an offense from 1975.
Good God, who would have thunk it?
And look at it, and it's worked out. Those are bold decisions that were made that a lot of people, not just local guys, were questioning. As a matter of fact, the national guys were questioning it more than the local guys.
Now, it's going to lead to more questions. It's going to lead to more questions. It's going to lead to questions about Russell Wilson and $30 million a year contracts and all that. But
I don't think that's a question. That's just going to be done.
Yeah.
I mean, if Kirk Cousins is getting $30 million, I mean, the question is, you know, do you give him 50?
Oh.
After what you saw on Monday night.
Sure. Just the whole point of usage and where you're guiding your offense through. But yeah. I get, you know, the points to win games and win Super Bowls and just doing more with less. That's Pete Carroll right now. And yep, one of the finest coaching jobs he's done all his whole career.
Yeah, I think he's going to win it. All right, coming up next, we get a little reckless at breakfast. We'll pick up on another thing that we discussed yesterday with Coach and Hugh. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
About me, I'll be alone, dancing, you know it.
It's Chug a Bug in the Morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. Time to get a little reckless at breakfast here this morning. And I want to focus on officiating today.
Okie doke.
Hugh Millen, for a long period of time, has said, try to get Mike Holmgren to come around on full-time officials.
Yep.
That's right, full-time officials. That'll solve the bad officiating that has plagued the National Football League for years. And it must, because we complain about it at a fevered pitch every season since I've been alive.
Yeah,
because how bad the officials are.
Yeah, they suck.
And you do believe that they suck.
Well, I think they're the best thing you got. I mean, I think that these guys are the best ones out there. But I just, officials in general, I don't like them.
Well, I will say this about fixing these issues. I really do think baseball can be done on a robot system. Camera angles, what have you. I mean, you might have to have one official because baseball has a lot of weird stuff that happens. That you might need somebody there to, like, answer questions from managers, like one human being standing in the middle of the field. But I think balls and strikes can be called that way. Fair or foul can be called with robots and cameras and what have you. That's one sport, because it's not a contact sport, that I think could actually be done without human beings, or at least minimal human interaction.
Well, there's definitely, yes, there's parts of it that can be. I mean, I'm going to argue on both sides of it, because there's parts of it that I like the idea, just get it right, and then there's other parts where I think there's a human element. When do you toss somebody out? Maybe that guy, you still have some human on there that, like, if all of a sudden the beanball war thing starts happening, you got to say, hey, all right, enough's enough, or if you're going to get tossed. I just think that you take away certain intricacies of the game that I enjoy. If all of a sudden it's a computer just going flat out, that's a ball or that's a strike, I want it to be done right. I just don't really necessarily want to burn tradition just for the sake of doing it, of making advancements. But
I don't know if you can do it, though, robots with the NFL. I mean, unless it's like Westworld. They look like human beings and they can function and, take you out on a date.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. I mean, unless we just get to the point where there just are androids walking around and we can. But I think we're a long way away from that. And I don't think Hugh's patience will wait for it.
I feel bad.
NFC Westworld.
I feel bad because I know, Chuck, look, you put a lot of thought into these things.
Yeah.
They're things you really believe in wholeheartedly and you want to present and everything. But like with the baseball robot umpires and everything, it's just another one where I am just so far against where you're at on it. And I want to go there with you on one of these. I really do. So I'm curious where you're going with football refs, because I want to.
I don't think robots can work in football. It's a contact sport. I mean, I think, by the way, NBA refs are worse than NFL refs. So, I mean, we've got obviously an officiating problem in sports.
Okay.
And it's a hard job. I mean, I don't care who you are. It's not going to be easy. You're going to get criticized. You're going to make mistakes. Yeah. It's a difficult thing. Clearly. I mean, if we can't have good officiating in any sport at any level, then obviously it's not the easiest thing to do.
No, it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, every league would like to fix their officiating issues that they have. But I don't know if we put enough resources to it. I mean, forget about full-time officials. I don't want to burst Hugh's bubble. But you can say you're a full-time official, and what's going to stop them from still trading stocks and whatever else that they want to do, you know? But I do believe that I don't know why. I mean, we have trade schools all the time. If you want to become an electrician, or if you want to become a computer expert, or whatever the case may be, you can master the soldering iron. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we got
radio.
Trade schools all the time. I don't know why we don't. This is a really well-paid profession. I wish somebody, my high school guidance counselor would have said, why don't you go to college for refereeing?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, where do we even come from? I didn't even know. Where do they come from? What does it take to be an official? So I Googled it.
Oh.
What does it take to become an NFL official? Wiki has a how to do anything. Here's their steps. Step one, get a handle on the game.
Oh, okay.
Play or attend games, it suggests.
Check.
Okay.
Check. Two. Wait,
so far, I'm good. I could do this.
Know the rules, which the current guys clearly don't.
I'm still in.
Three, go to rules clinics. So there are rules clinics
Damn it.
That you can go to.
I'm out.
Question four, referee local football game. So start low and work your way up and get used to the speed of the game and the eye and everything else. Five, stay fit.
You know, some of these guys I see running around on NFL fields, I'm sorry, they just did not pay attention to step five. They skipped over that.
Then you have to get certified, and then they say, then they suggest you referee college and semi-pro games, again, trying to get to the point where you can be in the NFL. Well, why don't we have schools? This is a high-paying job. Why doesn't the NFL set up a program in colleges that you can go, or trade schools or something like that? How about we not take guys in the NFL who are officiating games and then try to improve them? Why don't we start with 18-year-old kids and let them develop as officials and then pick the best ones to go to the NFL? We do that with the players on the football field. We do that with the coaches. We just don't take a player and say, you're an NFL player, now get good at the game.
Right.
Well, forget full-time officials. How about grooming them? How about developing them? What's wrong with having that as a major in college or having a trade school where you can go to? And as an 18-year-old, and I want to be an NFL official, and that's a really high-paying job, and I might not make it, I might not climb the corporate ladder, but same thing goes with this business. Or any business. You might not end up being one of the guys that gets paid $250,000. You might end up having to take a job at Home Depot.
Right.
But your goal to start is, I want to be good, and I want to progress through the ranks, and I want good grades in college, and then I want to get a job in college football or pro football. They should all be in on this. Every single sport should invest in a school that trains officials, and they allow 18-year-olds hand out scholarships, take tuition, whatever the case may be. How about developing them like we do players, coaches, and everything else in our sports? Just not deciding, oh, your last name's Hockley. Your dad's got muscles. I bet you could do this.
Well, I agree. I think that there definitely could be probably more. I couldn't tell you exactly how many type of, not trade schools, that's not the right word, but training courses, training things. I can speak on the behalf of the baseball side of things, right? Baseball guys, let's say that you're a guy, you went to college or you're just coming out of high school, you're like, I love baseball, I'm not good at playing it, but I love it so much, I'd love to be an umpire. There is courses that you can go to down in Florida. A kid that I coached baseball, he's going heading to one down in Florida here in like a week or two to do it again for the second year because he didn't get chosen to be hired to go coach one of these low-level minor league clubs. And he's going to go do it again and learn again, and then you go through the minor leagues and you get better, and I think that's what refs do. I don't think there's very many.
Well, there's
not
a minor league system in the NFL.
Well, college is essentially the minor league system, right? And then your high school is another part of the minor league system. And then there's refs at Grid Kids, the little sixth graders that are playing. So it's like, yeah, if you want to do it, you need to start. If you're a high school kid, you should be doing your youth football games in your town. And then if you're good enough, by the time you get out of high school, you should be doing your high school games, your old high school games. And then as maybe you go to college and maybe you don't, then you work your way up to college. And if you're good enough, I think that's actually how it does work. That being said, I think there should be some sort of kind of unified school where you could go to where that's where if you then want to go to the NFL, you go to that school and the top guys that graduate from that school, that's who's getting the jobs in the NFL.
Chuck, I'm 100% with you.
Whoa!
Wow, look at that.
Let's do it.
This is the first time that you stepped out in the middle of the segment and told me, you're stupid. I never agree with you, but go ahead. And then I ended up convincing you. How about that?
It wasn't even a hard sell. Let's do it. Let you and me start it.
Official State University.
Yes. Yeah. OSU.
Yeah, OSU.
Go Beavs? No, wait. They got to be the Zebras.
Referee A&M.
The Zebras. The Zebras would be their mascot for sure.
They gotta be the Zebras, right?
Whistle Tech.
Not Whistle U?
Maybe Whistle U.
flag you. I guess that's what we'll do.
Ocho is next.